Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back to Paris History avec a Hemingway. You may have remembered our previous episodes on Romanticism. We talked about the painters. Well, today we are talking about the writers, the authors during the Romanticism period, and I am so excited to hear more. I'll let Claudine take it from here.
I love this one. Like, this is another one, like I said about the artists. Like, you might be like, oh, I don't know if I like Romanticism, and then you're going to hear who wrote these books and who these authors were and what these books were. And you'd be like, oh yeah, actually, I think I am a big fan.
Yeah. Like, we just didn't know we were.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's definitely one of the most famous French books probably of all time. And that, of course, is, we have to talk about Victor Hugo. He was born February 26, 1802. And in 1831, he wrote a little book called Notre Dame du Paris, known in America as The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, that was during the Romanticism.
That, so romantic. He was basically, I mean, that's kind of what he, you know, he's basically that whole period. He, at the time, was inspired to write this book because he kept on walking by and seeing Notre Dame du Paris, the church, and seeing it just basically falling apart. And so he thought, you know, loved this building and thought, you know, what can I do about this? He was really into saving a bunch of things. And he also saved something else that people might not even have anything to do, know that he was had anything to do with it. But he kind of wrote this book to draw attention to Notre Dame, which is exactly what he did. So he began in 1832. And he basically was trying to, you know, to inspire people to take a look at this. At the time, a lot of the stained glass had been removed and replaced with just white glass so that it could let more light into the church. I can't even imagine that. The book, when he was writing it, was kept constantly getting pushed aside. Because he had started it much earlier. And then in 1830, in September, his publisher told him, like, you have to finish this. Like, you know, we've given you money. You have to finish this. No excuses about this. So in March of 1831 is when he actually, the first edition was finished. And it was not how he wanted it, because he just was like, couldn't get them off his back. So he was like, all right, well, here we go. At the time, it takes place in 1482 around Louis XI. In book number 3 of the 11 books, so basically chapters, it gives this lengthy description of Notre Dame itself and in the state that it was. And if you, even if you haven't read it, if you could go online and try to find it or get it on Kindle and just read that chapter, like, it's just this, I mean, it's one of the best descriptions you could ever have. I mean, it brings Notre Dame completely to life. Of course, when the fire happened in 2019, this book again skyrocketed to the bestseller.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing when you think it was written 200 years ago.
Yeah. But
as he was writing it, at the time, you know, there's the two very famous characters in the book. There's Esmeralda and Quasimodo. And we did a podcast episode about his mistress, his long mistress, Jean Duval. And he ended up that he based the book on Esmeralda's based on his wife, Adele. And at the time, she was having an affair with his friend, ex-friend, we should say, Sainte-Beuve. And so he based Quasimodo on his friend.
No. That's yeah. so wrong.
Which is pretty horrible. Because, I mean, Quasimodo is a heart of gold, sweet thing. But I don't know if I'd be like, hey, I wrote a book about you. And, oh, yeah, you're the...
You're welcome.
Yeah. But at the time, the book not only, it, like, reinvigorated people to fall back in love with Notre Dame and basically, because of his book, it made them invest all this money to have it updated, but it also brought back the interest in Gothic architecture as at period. So when you think of like Romanticism and it being like, you know, 19th century, you don't think that Gothic architecture, which goes back to like, you know, 1200, you don't think of like, oh, Gothic architecture is romantic. But because it's yeah. from so long ago, but it really is because it was all brought back again.
That's so true. I never thought about that.
Yeah. So it kind of reawakened it. And so Villers-le-Duc, who I adore, who was an architect, self-taught architect, he redid Sainte-Chapelle. And then he was also given basically the commission to then also do Notre Dame. So he became like, I mean, he was like a rock star at the period. And so he was really inspired. Of course, he loved Gothic architecture. And then he was doing all the stuff for the country with being, you know, restoring all the monuments. He went down, they did Carcassonne, which is more a little bit more medieval. But he was a big proponent and brought back a lot of the Gothic architecture. And you could all basically say it kind of goes back to Victor Hugo.
Yeah, no, that's all connected.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. He, at the time, you know, Victor Hugo got in a lot of trouble because he was also very outspoken about politics. And he was forced into exile from France before Napoleon III could do it for him. So he got in big trouble. But, you know, he was also like quite the ladies' man. I mean, he had his longtime mistress that, you know, his wife was even aware of because she was having her own things. But he, like, I mean, if you see pictures of him when he was younger, most people just know the picture of him when he's older and he's got this big beard and, you know, got a big belly. But when you see pictures of him, well, you know, drawings of him when he was younger, he was pretty handsome. And so he was like quite the ladies' man. Like every story I read about a different like actress or something at that period of time, all of them had some sort of relationship with Victor Hugo. So
romantic. I didn't think he was a looker. Yeah. He wasn't a looker in my book.
No, I mean, his younger pictures definitely look better, but you know, I mean, I don't know. Some of them, like some of the pictures I see sometimes I'm like, that person could be like today. Like just sometimes like their features back then just seem so much older. And sometimes you see like that could be a person today. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So he, at the same time, when he was doing this, of course, his other most favorite famous book is Les Miserables. And on June 5th, 1832, he was sitting in the Tuileries where he was, you know, supposed to be working on his newer, you know, updated editions of Notre Dame. And he heard a bunch of gunfire. And so he was, he walked towards it, which, you know, as one does when you hear gunfire.
Yeah, normal.
Yeah. And he was walking down the Rue Saint-Sauveur and he had to hide behind a pillar for hours because bullets were flying by. But 30 years later is when he wrote Les Miserables and it was based on that period.
What?
Most people think Les Miserables is the revolution. The, you know, wow. When you say the revolution, most people think of it as the one in, you know, late 1790s. But it was based on, you know, there's like a bunch of revolutions in France. Like the painting by my favorite Delacroix, that's 1832. That's the same one that Victor Hugo was, you know, inspired by. So there's all a whole, but there was 1848. There was all of these different revolutions. But most people think Les Mis is about the big revolution that brought down, you know, Marie Antoinette.
That's so interesting. I had no idea
that. Yeah. That nope. There's many more. But we could thank Victor Hugo for saving Notre Dame. He also saved an amazing, cool thing to see in Paris when you're there, the Roman amphitheater that is over in the Latin Quarter. And they were digging for the metro and they came across these ruins. And it was Victor Hugo who, again, led the charge to have it saved.
Always Victor.
So if you have not seen that, go check it out when you're in Paris, because it is pretty cool. Like, you could just kind of imagine them being like, you know, lion wrestling or whatever it was that they did.
Yeah.
In there, the first time I went to finally go find it is I went in there and there was like, I don't know, a bunch of school groups of like high school kids, and they were all like horsing around. And I was like, this is a place of history, people.
Calm down.
Just really ruined my moment with it. But it is pretty cool. I mean, it's definitely not, you know, it's in the shape and it's in the arena shape. But then they have some informational plaques and like kind of how it used to be. I think maybe the day that we release this is, or the day before, we're doing the live walk of the area of Jardin des Plantes and this. So when you see this, I'll put a link to the video, because on the live walk, we're going to go through here and we'll show it to you. So I'll put the link to see the live video there, so you could see the amphitheater itself that Victor saved.
Even better.
Yeah. Another gentleman who not as much was considered a romantic, but was a huge inspiration to the romantic writers, was François René de Chateaubriand. And I just love to say his name. Chateaubriand. And no, that's not a steak. That's a whole different thing. In America, there's a steak called the Chateaubriand. And it is not really has any, it doesn't really have anything to do with them, except for it could be. Sometimes people think that it got that name from his chef that created a sauce for the steak, but the Chateaubriand is a cut of steak in the US. So two different.
Really?
Yeah.
Good information to have.
I know. See, it's you never know what you're going to learn on our podcast here. But he was a huge inspiration. He was very outspoken against the Bonapartes, and he was a big supporter of the return of the Bourbons. And he would, at the time, he wrote a lot about nature, and he kind of had these like waves of passion, they said, in his writing. So he was the one who inspired Victor Hugo and Balzac. And so he had this huge inspiration. And then also for the artist, we talked about this painting when we talked about the Love in the Louvre, the beautiful painting of Atala, which was the young girl, you know, that wanted to, she was in America and she fell in love with the young Native American, but her mom said, you can't marry him because he wasn't a Christian. And so she ended up killing herself because she'd rather be dead than not be with him. Even though that day he was on his way to the church to basically become Christian.
Poor timing.
I know, bad timing. He's kind of like Romeo and Juliet. But she, this painting is beautiful. Yeah. And it's so Anne-Louise Giraud based it on the story that he wrote of the funeral of Atala. And on the side of the cave, it actually has some of the words that Chateaubriand wrote about it. So it's this really, really beautiful painting. Of course, there's Henri de Balzac. He was born in 1799. He is famous for writing. His most famous thing was that he wrote the Comédie Humaine, which is about all of these stories based in France, or all of these very short stories. He wrote at like lightning speed. He cranked out so many short stories and books faster than anybody else did. It was pretty amazing about it. He had this idea to write this, and he actually said, I'm about to become a genius, is what he quoted himself as. So from 1829 to 1848, he wrote this multi-volume set of short stories that basically took place in from 1815 to 1830. 91 of them were finished, 46 of them were unfinished, but still published. So a lot, that's quite a few. He basically is kind of given credit for inventing the modern novel, of what we think of the modern novel, with recurring characters. So, you know, all those people that write this, you know, trilogies and stuff, they could all thank Balzac for that, because that's what he did.
Yeah, thanks Balzac.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, he was a very eccentric, kind of quirky guy, and some of these stories, you know, are based, some of them, on the royalty and all these other stories. You could download the whole thing, and you could get it in English. I think it was, you know, you could download it on your Kindle or download it, what, it's not very, it's, you know, I think it was like $5, $6 or something. But it is kind of interesting just to pick a few of them and read them. He was basically, he liked to call himself the secretary of society because he was keeping all of these, writing all these stories and just pumping them out. I mean, he was almost, almost tabloid-ish in some ways. But also his stories also went from the Revolution and the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. So he kind of captured a whole huge swath of history of France and the people. Again, with some of them that are recurring in it, there's all sorts of like, you know, there's so many times that the live walks that we do videos, you know, he probably comes up every other episode because, you know, this street or something was in a Balzac, you know, short story or something like that. So it comes up quite a bit. The kind of the bad boy of the time, Charles Baudelaire, he also comes up a lot when we do walks because he literally lived all over Paris for like 2 months at a time. He is very famous for Les Fleurs du Mal, which was the huge book that he did that he worked on from 1840 until his death in 1857. It wasn't published until after his death, but all of the things that he had been writing, you know, as the pieces were, they'd be, you know, reproduced in the newspaper and things like that. So people were reading what he was writing. He goes through every single kind of mood. There's times that, you know, they're inspired by his mistress. There's times that he, you know, complained and basically tore her apart in there. He also was very, very against what Haussmann and Napoleon III were doing to Paris. And so he waxes on poetically mourning the loss of Paris and how it's changing and these huge boulevards. And, you know, he said, believe it or not, horrible things about the Louvre, which I just can't forgive him for. But he wrote the Tableau Parisien, which is a 24-hour life in Paris. And it starts with the sunrise and goes all the way to the morning twilight. And it's basically just his way of an ode to old Paris, changing, you know, rapidly changing. Because when Haussmann was doing that, you know, they were getting rid of 60,000 homes as they cut through the city, destroying all the streets. You know, he was kind of the bad boy. He was got a little into drugs as well. At one point, he was a huge proponent for marijuana. And they had like a little club trying to tout the benefits of marijuana. So, you know, now he would just be completely just any other guy.
Same.
He would just be, you know, anyone else. But an author that is basically kind of thought to be the father of romanticism is somebody we've also talked about before. But I was happy to do a little more research on him to find out that he didn't seem like the complete kind of pitiful fellow that we know him of from our George Sand episode we did. But Alfred de Musset, he was born in December of 1812. From a very early age, he was kind of drawn to the arts where he used to adapt books and turn them into like small plays. He enrolled at the Lycée Henri IV, which was quite the prestigious place to enroll in. And he would write all of these different essays that really kind of got the attention of people, including Victor Hugo at the time. He ended up pursuing law and also medicine. He didn't like to do either one of them. He got really grossed out when it came to doing dissections. And so he decided he didn't want to do that. Before he was 20 years old, he published, he was one of the first to publish basically of the Romantic period and became known all over Paris. But like I mentioned earlier, he is more known for his kind of rocky relationship with George Sand. And basically, that's kind of before what I knew about him when we did the episode. And when I was doing all the research for George Sand, this is basically all he comes up with as being this, like, you know, kind of pathetic puppy dog of hers. In June of 1833... George Sand met Musset and she moved him into her apartment that's on the Quai Malaquais, right next to where the École des Beaux-Arts is now. he at the time had these moments of like madness and hallucinations. And so if you remember for the episode, they went down to Venice, and that's when he kind of had this huge attack. And so she called in a doctor to come help him. And then she decided she fell in love with the doctor and took off.
Oh,
and then left for Alfred down there in Venice. And so then he finally, you know, kind of got out of his, you know, moments of madness and came back up to Paris to find George Sand living now with the doctor. And so Musette was like, forget you. So he left. He went to Germany just for a few months. And then when he came back to France, because she kind of gave the doctor an ultimatum, who was married and had children back, and they stayed in Venice. He ended up coming up here to Paris. And then she, you know, she gave him an ultimatum, and he was like, no, I'm not going to leave my, you know, I'm not going to move here and marry you. I'm not going to marry you. And so then poor Alfred comes back, and here he is. They broke up again a month later. And then she decided to sit for Delacroix, which I'm going to, now I think I've decided I'm going to figure out a way to weave Delacroix into every single episode we do. There's a way. Even if it's somebody from, you know, our brand new lady from 1970, I'll find a way to bring Delacroix. But Delacroix painted her, and she sat for him, and then she decided to send the painting to her old lover, Alfred. And when he saw it, he sent a letter back to her saying how sad that she looked. And so he decided, well, maybe, you know, they'll get back together again. And then 2 months later, after they get back together, she basically broke up with him once for all. So when I remember hearing that story, I was like, oh, I was like, it's kind of, you know, kind of sad and depressing, but also kind of a little pathetic. But
yeah, exactly.
He was apparently like, he was the bee's knees. He was like a hot commodity. He was like a dandy, and like every woman wanted him. And he was like, been involved. He was involved with like every woman of the period. Like,
but
George Sand. George Sand was involved.
I think he takes his knees in every episode too.
Yeah. But she, like, there's one that we're going to do soon about this actress from the period. And his name comes up in that book that I'm reading, because he had a thing with her too. So I was like, oh, he was quite the ladies' man, which is kind of interesting. So he later wrote a book called La Confession d'un Enfant de Siècle in 1836. And it's basically based on his relationship with George Sand. And I just learned that a few days ago. And I've already ordered the book because I have got to read that. It was quite popular at the time. It had been made into a film twice. The second time it was made into a film in 2012. And Charlotte Gainsbourg, the daughter of Serge Gainsbourg, who is wonderful, was in the movie. And I was like, oh, I have to look this up and I got to watch it. I found out that it was apparently the movie that has the distinction in 2015 when it was released to be the lowest grossing movie of the entire year. Guess how much it made?
How much?
$74.
What?
I was like, is there a comma missing? Is there like, no, $74. Premiered in one theater in the US.
This is sad.
And so 2015, I mean, how much were movie tickets then? Probably what? I don't know, $8 or $9?
Yeah.
So what, like eight people went?
That's really sad.
That's very sad. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll just read the book.
You're better.
Yeah. But, you know, from saying, you know, it just was really interesting because, like, from the things I've read about George Sand, it doesn't really like, it just plays him as a part in her life as like her, you know, unstable lover. Not the fact that he was probably even bigger than she was at the time and was just like the belle of the ball in Paris. And so I thought that was really interesting. He was known to basically, like I said, sleep with all these different women. He was also basically could be found almost every other day in a brothel. So he was, maybe there's a reason why, as we have learned, maybe there's a reason why he had these little bouts of madness from his ways with the ladies. Makes sense. There was a little syphilis playing some role in this.
Yeah, his brain was destroyed.
Yeah, I think maybe his brain was destroyed. But his writings were turned in many times into operas. George Bizet Who we'll mention again in a minute, who was known for Carmen. He adapted some of his writings into operas. Jacques Offenbach, who was the one who created the Can-Can, who we brought up when we talked about our very favorite courtesan, de la Bain. He also adapted some of his writings onto for the stage. He had died at just 46 years old on May 2nd, 1857, after he held a seat in the Académie Française for 5 years.
So, what happened to him?
Mad respect now for the poor guy. And I feel bad that we thought he was crazy. But our last guy is a gentleman named Prosper Mérimée. And he was born on September 28, 1803. In 1834, he was named the Inspector General of Historical Monuments. So in my book, that's pretty awesome. He was involved in the one that he got to be one of the main people that chose Villers-le-Duc to restore Notre Dame. So pretty cool. He was born up at number 7 at the Square Saint-Geneviève. At that time when he was born there, that was basically where Rue Clovis is now. It was where the Abbey was that we've talked about when we talked about Saint-Geneviève. So where he lived was leveled to put a road in there. But I love the fact that he was born up there. He went to the Lycée Napoléon, which was basically where all the elite families of Paris went. And he spent most of his time writing about the monuments and archaeological finds of France. But at the time, he also had met and was very good friends with Maria, who was the Countess de Montijot, who was the mother of Empress Eugenie, who married Napoleon III. And she had told him about this story that she had read in the news, and it inspired him to write Carmen. So when you think of George and the famous opera Carmen, I never really knew that there's a whole thing behind it, that it was actually based on this book. And so Prosper wrote this book. And then George Bizet, in the book, Carmen, it doesn't have, you know, the book is not all centered around Carmen, but of course the opera is. And so Bizet changed that a little bit, but she just kind of had this small part. But it's really interesting because I, of course, these things came from something, but I never really looked into it before. And so Bizet gets all these this credit for Carmen, but there's also Prosper behind it because it was his story. Quite interesting. Everything comes together. But he was more, you know, he's basically, he wrote a bunch of short stories and they were all based, you know, on history of France and different things. He basically would write and keep all the details of the monuments of France that he had published that people loved. And in September 23rd, 1870, which he died 5 days, you know, before his birthday, died in the south of France. But the French papers actually reported that he died the year before. Poor guy. So, you know, it was I know. He was probably like, hey, like Hemingway, they did the Hemingway. They said Hemingway died 3 times. But of course, you know, there's all of the authors, but then, you know, there's also the musicians. There's, of course, Chopin, who was huge during that period of time. Again, another lover of George Sand. We could just make a chart of how all of these people.
I want that chart to happen.
Yeah, it was. It's very incestuous back then. But of course, Chopin, he died when he was just 39 years old, which is quite sad. He his funeral, he had it all planned out. He was the one that had his funeral was planned to be at the Madeleine. And then these two women he had asked before he died to sing. And the Madeleine was like, no, women cannot be on the altar singing. And so his funeral was put off by a few weeks until they negotiated that the women could sing on the stage, but they had to stand behind a black curtain.
That's rude. So crappy.
Yeah. So he is buried at Père Lachaise, but his heart is back in Poland. So
I think that's so weird when they move the organs around.
They did. I mean, some of them, like the kings, they would move, like, I mean, they would take all, like, I mean, they could go to like 15 different places. Of course, we have the relics of the saints that are in churches, but those are more like bones and hair. But like the kings, it'd be like, these are his, like, there's things in the Louvre and in museums that were the holder of the entrails, which is basically just your intestines.
Ugh, that's so weird to me.
No, I'm making a note now when I go. Well, maybe my heart stays in Paris.
Yeah. Your whole body there.
Yeah, the whole thing. I don't need it to be pieced out.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it together.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, all of those, all, you know, and when you read these different periods, and it's just like all the, you know, it's like the impressionists, when you read, you know, when we now look at things and we've talked about the different artists at that time, they were all just hanging out, like, you know, Bert Morisot was just hanging out at Manet's house because she's married to his brother. But like, to us, it's like, oh my God. But the same thing with all the different periods, like during the Romanticism, all of those people, you know, knew each other. There was all, you know, what are they going to say about our period? Like, these were all the Instagram people.
I was going to say the influencers were hanging out.
These are all the influencers. Like, that's just sad.
It could never be as cool.
I know. I don't think we could be as cool as, like, you know, when Van Gogh was hanging out with Gauguin and Manet and Monet are, you know, complaining at that time about whatever, you know, oh God. You know, I mean, what did they do? Did they gossip about the other artists?
Yeah, I mean, it's just never going to be that cool again.
No, we just have to face it. I was at the Louvre the other day, and you know, I saw Fantin Latour there. Like, what was he doing? He's using pink on a painting. Like, what?
Not cool.
They're spilling the tea.
Well, thank you guys for listening, and definitely check out ClaudineHemingway.com to get more information and photos. And Claudine offers free live tours of Paris every Sunday, so you can watch from home and feel like you're here with us. And definitely drop her a line if you have any questions, and we look forward to having you listen next week.
Thank you for listening to Paris History avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's BLEU, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.